Welcome to Unpacking. This is our last edition for this week. 7 minutes past the hour of 6 o'clock, and we are here. So, we are here talking to you. Welcome, welcome. Good morning, everyone. I think today I'm stronger than yesterday. Yesterday I was stronger than the day before. So that's how I am. I'm stronger than yesterday, and tomorrow I'll be stronger than today. So it's a day, it's a good day. And for the Christians, you know what we say? We say this is a day that the Lord has made, and we shall be glad and rejoice in it. That's a day. So every day is a day, is a good day. Every day is an opportunity. Every day is a new call. So every day calls you for something. You know, the moment you find yourself alive today is because there is a purpose for why you should be alive today. You are allowed to be part of today. You are not just alive by accident or by some mistake. No, it's because you are allowed to be part of this life for a purpose. So take that as a very serious issue, and that we take for granted. There are people that are on breathing machines, you know, fighting for their lives, at least fighting for every inch of life left, you know, using every fiber of their being to at least survive. So, now, but you just stood out, you know, you just launched out from the sleep. And you stand up and you are gone, you know, because there is a reason why you should be alive. You know, the chances of us dying are very higher than our chances of living. Because the chances of us dying are very high, and they are very many. But once you find yourself alive, you need to know that you are called to do something, and don't spend your life. You know, life is like money. Spend your life wisely, then you will see the fruit. Spend your life wrongly, then you will see it. You will know that you made a mistake. Right? That's a greeting and just an encouragement for you. We get into our first story. And I encourage you to go and read all the stories, because for me, what I do, I just give you the context of the story. I don't read the story for you. I will just give you the context of the story. Now, okay. So Namibia apparently needs 45 billion to build houses, or to solve the house backlog. And for that to happen, Namibia needs, you know, financing. Let me just get the term that they used here correct. Okay. So, For that to be done, Namibia needs coordinated planning, innovating financing, and innovative financing and coordinated coordination between private sector and government. This is on Ulwazi. It is coming from the Ulwazi shore between Neshila and it is the CEO of First Capital. That was a discussion. I'm sure you followed the interview. So, I'm sure you followed the interview, or you did not listen. So, it was between Neshila and Dr. Martin Mwinga, the CEO of First Capital Namibia. So that was the conversation. Now, most of us, but before we get to that, we need to know that the estimate was the estimate was 70 billion. Namibia needed around 70 billion to build houses. So how did it come to 45 billion? But the amount of money doesn't really matter. So the amount of money, in as much as it matters in terms of planning, it is not really the issue. Because now we are talking about innovative financing. And, you know, coordinated planning. And then we talk about the collaboration between the public sector or the private sector and government. We are living in a world where, you know, we live in the world of profit. When we live in the world of profit, that's why banks are not charity organizations. Most of us are forcing banks to become charity organizations. Banks will never be charity organizations because banks were established to make profit. Banks were not established to give alms and to give charity. Maybe through their social and corporate, you know, their corporate and social responsibility. But that's why even the corporate or social responsibility or social and corporate responsibility, however you speak it, is not something that is forced on a company. That, okay, you must do. What is your social and corporate responsibility? Bring it. Let's see. No. It is not something that you force on a company because that is a willing giver. It's on a willing giver basis. So you don't force it, you don't force a company to do social and corporate responsibility. The government, in as much as it can do that, well, it will win, but not really because there is no law. There could be a law to say every company that comes here must at least have an arm of social and corporate responsibility. But there is no act of parliament that is there to impose, to have this law or regulation imposed on a company that it doesn't do, that does that, or that doesn't do that, or to somewhat, you know, penalize or, you know, to pronounce, you know, penalties or to issue penalties on a company. Because if that was the case, then we could have had a lot of companies penalized under this or given penalties. Because some companies, since they came, there is nothing they have done for anyone. So, when we talk about the housing issue, well, I think Standard Bank had a one brick something. $1, one brick. I don't remember how they used to call it. I don't know how, where it ended. They couldn't go ahead with that for a long time. Because a bank is not a charity organization. A bank is there to make profit. And once they see that a certain exercise does not bring profit, they will eventually just call it off. It doesn't matter how important it was. Because their aim for existing is to make profit. You know, the first bankers were Jews. Because they used to sit on benches exchanging money. Now, what made them rich was they realized that, look, we are small in number. We cannot win a war against anyone. In fact, they tried to revolt against the Roman colonial rule, but their revolt ended up in a humiliating defeat. They were crushed by the Romans. And their land, Israel, taken up and renamed to Palestine. That's another history for another day. But what I want to do is, so they started doing money exchange. Like, they started having money, and then they borrow money to people. They lend money to people, and then the people will bring back their money with interest. That's how the idea of banking, you know, started. You bring your money, we use it, we add interest on the money. And so the word bank came from the word bench, because the people that used to exchange money used to sit on benches, and then they do money exchange. That's where the Jewish community got it right, and they became rich from that, or by that. Now, fast forward to our situation. We are talking about collaboration with the private sector in solving the household, you know, backlog. But the problem that we do not want to realize uh, I think we need to sit down and determine for whom are we going to build these houses. Are we going to build these houses for sale, to make profit, or for charity? Because just imagine $45 billion that can be built, that can be used to build 50,000 houses or so. Or let me say maybe another 90,000. Let me say 90 billion for 100,000 housing or more. 100,000 house units. Now, who are these people that are targeted? Who is the target market here? Is it the low income people or middle income people, or upper income people? Or because there are people that are not even part of low income, that don't even have an income at all. And we are talking about housing for all. Now, do we have a target market? Because, you know, let's just talk about, for example, the willing buyer, willing seller. And the question that I always have is, who is that willing buyer? Because we know the willing seller. But who is that willing buyer? At the end of the day, willing buyer just end up being the government. And the government is the largest non-profit organization. And it's the largest charity organization. This is where it brings us to another story. I did not cover it yesterday, but I will talk about it today. So the government now becomes the largest charity organization, the largest donor. And if you look at the 90% of government money goes to donations, like charity. Of course, the government is making, maybe it's getting some revenue from, making revenue from the tax that is, you know, citizens are paying, but also at the same time, a lot of citizens that could not pay tax are being subsidized by government. Now, when we are talking about housing, who are the target market that we are talking about? Are we not going to end up having 50,000 houses built? And it's only for the upper and middle income people. Because when we are talking about low income, we also need to know what is low. How do you determine low? You know, how do you determine what is low? How do you determine the lofty or the height? Is it by number? Is it by spending? Is it by what? How do we come to determine that this is a low income person? Is there any threshold that we reach to determine, or in order to determine that this person is a low income person? Because when we mean low income, it could be that what we determine as to be low is higher to somebody else. So that's why, that's where it becomes difficult for one to get a house through the banks, because the banks check a lot of things for you to, for them to give you a go ahead to say you can now purchase a house through the bank. You can be paying 7,000 per month as in rent, but you don't you may not qualify to have a house. So that is the issue. Then it leaves us with a problem. Because when government is going to collaborate with private sector, is it on a charity point of view or on a profit? And has there been a situation where the government will give you a house for free when you cannot afford, even though you cannot afford a plot or to pay for water and electricity per month? Has there been such a situation? Because this is what we are putting in the minds of people. We are thinking, we are giving them an impression to think that the government is working on building a building houses for everyone. But I think we need to correct, we need to correct some things here. That the houses, even if the government built 50,000 houses, those houses are for people that can afford them. You still have affordability coming into question. That how do we determine who can afford what? Or how do we determine affordability? What do we use to determine whether or not the person can afford? So, for example, where will the government build these houses? Maybe unless if the government built houses in small towns. But the moment you improve a shanty town into a proper town, that also means you improve the value of the assets thereof. In the moment you improve the value of the asset, you increase the value of the in the assets, that means that the amount to pay for that is also going to be high. Will somebody earning a 2.5, a 2,500, be able to afford the house under this, you know, suggested project? Of course, this was just a discussion between Franciscus Nashila and Mr. Martin Mwinga. It's not a plan on the table already. This is just a discussion of him giving his perspective on what he thinks can be done. It's not government that said they are coming up to say we already have the $45 billion to build the house. So this is just these are just suggestions and predictions. They are not yet real. They are not yet practically viable and practically true, because where is government going to get the $45 billion? Well, the government can get $45 billion, but where? So, this now brings us to what we have been talking about yesterday. We said yesterday, I said, that the government is not using its medulla oblongata. So if there is any person called government, you must go and tell him or her that they are not using their medulla oblongata, because money is available. But the government is not using medulla oblongata to get that money. The government is not, the government has limited GIPF. You know, that is called government, institution pension fund. So, they must rename it. Let it be government inclusive pension fund. Because as it is now, GIPF has a lot of money. It has over $200 billion as we speak now. So GIPF can provide that money, $45 billion. It can provide $90 billion and build houses. And they can make profit out of that money. But how will they do that? Because this 200 billion or 250 billion is money for, is people's pension money. So how do you want to benefit from people's pension money when you didn't, when you were not deducted, you do not, you are not part of government, you are not paying tax, and you think government is going to build a house for you and give it to you, hand it to you because you don't have a house? That will never happen. And if it happens, then the government is in for bankruptcy, because they are not going to make profit out of this money. They are going to distribute house from a charity point of view. And I don't think that is viable. That's feasible. We need to also understand, in as much as government is, must give, government is running an economy. And if government go bankrupt today, it is the same people, you, that are going to get in the street to march under your political party regalia, but you forgot that you are living in a free house provided by government. So that's how complicated this situation is. Now, but if government uses its medulla oblongata, the government, like I said yesterday, there are millions, there are hundreds of thousands of people that are paying rent that are rejected by the banks because apparently they cannot afford, based on the banking, on the bank loan, you know, criteria. Those people cannot afford, but those people can afford to pay rent. The person alone in 6 months, he has paid around, you know, almost 90,000 to rent. But is that not, does GIPF not see that they deserve that 90,000? From these people? Does NHE not see that? And they are always bailed out by government. NHE for all people. Namibian House Enterprise. Namibian Housing Enterprise. Bailed out by government again because they are not making profit. They become insolvent. When we are here, we're being rejected by the banks. We have 90,000 to spend. So in fact, when we are talking about the housing, we say we need, innovative financing. and coordinated planning and collaboration. Those are terminologies, very big ones. We don't need that yet. In this country, what we need a rebaptism. People need to be rebaptized. CEOs of company, of government, government, you know, state-owned enterprises, CEO of state-owned enterprises, they need a new baptism. Because it seems that these guys are not living on Earth. They are living in Mars. How is it that you have hundreds of thousands of people that are being rejected by the local banks? And you are going back to government to be bailed out when you have money lying around. I'm telling you that in 6 months right now, I spent around 90,000. And at the end of the year, I'm going to have spent around $180,000 in rent alone. How many people are spending that amount? In fact, some people are spending higher than that. But they are rejected by the banks because the bank has its own, you know, criteria. Why don't you lower your own criteria and take this money from the NHE would have been massive by this time. You see, we don't need the Greek terminologies or rocket science to understand this thing. It is either there is a brand of expired wine that we drink, or there is a baptism that we underwent, which is a wrong baptism, that is not allowing us to think. Because we don't even need a lot of work. We could make 45 billion. We could make 45 billion very easily. And in fact, we could borrow that money to say, GIPF, give us that money. And in a period of 2 years, that money has already generated interest because you have a lot of Namibians that cannot qualify to buy houses through the bank, but they qualify to give money to landlords. How many landlords are registered? Who is supervising how much who is making? The landlords are making money. In fact, they are the second banks now. Because they are making, why does government not become a landlord? Municipality, you know, town councils, you are crying. You are saying, apparently, you are underfunded. How many people in your town that are in renting and they cannot afford the houses from the bank, but they are affording to rent every month consistently? And you are watching all that and you still want to be funded by government when you have money? Because a municipality, you can just service land, build, you know, flats, get all those people. You have made the money. Get all those people that are spending 90,000 in 6 months. That in a year's time, they are going to get 180,000. That's a lot of money. How many 180,000 will you make in, you can make a lot of money. In fact, if you have 100 people renting and they are paying every month, let me just say roughly, you know, you will make $500,000 per month. $500,000 per month in 100 people. Or more. But we want something to fall from heaven, from the skies. We are waiting for a miracle. Well, good luck on that. We will talk all we want. We can get all the CEOs of all companies and talk about housing issues all you want. But that will not change the situation until we think. You know, until we learn to use our brain. You know what Coca-Cola did? The Coca-Cola realized that during Christmas time, it's winter time, and people don't drink Coke when it is cold. So Coca-Cola came up with a plan. And what they did is they understood that who is the target market for Christmas? They understood that Christmas is for Christians. And to get Christians drink Coke, what can we do? We need to come up with a doctrine. We need to come up with something that is aligning almost to what Christians believe. They came up with Father Christmas and with Santa Claus. The rest you know already. That Coke. So, this is people, these are people thinking, using brain. These are people using brain. And do you know that on a cigarette, it is written how dangerous the cigarette that you are smoking is, but you still smoke it? Why? Because the person that is selling it is using the brain. The person that is selling the cigarette is using the brain. And you are not using your brain. Let's go for a short break and we'll come back. I'm having much interest in this story. But let's go for a short break. We'll come back. I want you to go and read it for yourself and you understand. I'm just giving you the contextual perspective on the story. But you are going to read it yourself in today's paper. The paper is already out.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
you know, a sign that we are not using our brain. When we talk about big money, we talk about big plans. And when we talk about them, it is as if those plans are somewhere in heaven, that we are waiting for a miracle to fall. When we are sitting on a miracle, we are sitting on a miracle. Renting is an economy by itself. And the people can say, look, all of you that cannot afford housing, bring your pay slips here. You are going to start paying this amount. We will build a house. And when your house is finished, we'll tell you, you start paying. You move into your house, you pay that amount. Well, good luck. But at the same time, we also need to know that even the people that are in houses that are being built, whether it is mass housing is still for people that can afford. It's not for free. So now it also leaves people that cannot afford. Where will they be? Because there's something that I call a geographical genocide, if there's such a term, where municipalities and town councils are moving into communal land. Now, you are destroying the homestead and giving people change to move out of their homestead to go and be in squatter camps. You are giving everyone just 300 square meters. A square meter plot where they cannot even farm, they cannot even own a chicken. So this is a destruction of livelihood, because these people, you are destroying them. They are poor already. They cannot afford them. They cannot even qualify for the mass housing that you are building. So there should be a way municipalities and town councils need to be stopped. They need to stop encroaching into communal areas. Because communal area is the only place that a poor person has. Now you are moving them out. Let me say, for example, a homestead which had fig trees, marula trees, and all these fruit, you know, trees that could be an economy to this person, and a field. And this person is moved out by, apparently there is development coming, and then given change. Apparently, in the name of, you know, the so-called, you know, compensation, the person goes and buys zinc and constructs a kambashu when the person was living in a homestead. And this is now a 300 or a 250 square meter. Whether you measure them in square kilometers or what. I'm not a town planner, so you can't expect me to know these things. But whether it is square meter or square kilometer, it's enough. 1 foot you are in the neighbor. And if you have hyper children, while they are jumping, one has already jumped in the pot. The place is too small. And then you expect people to do it. So, that's another problem. Now, as long as a poor person has their homestead intact, they will not come and bother you with housing in towns. Because they have their homesteads. There are people that are content living in the villages. But now, town councils are moving into communal areas. And then they are claiming land to be theirs. And then, you know, people are moved to shanty towns. You know, and the congested places, because apparently that's development. Land is being, it's now a municipal area. Well, in as much as you can blame the town council, it's not entirely blamed on them. It is you. Because your voters card. It is your voters card that is speaking. Because you have a voter's card. You have said down to communal area and down to traditional authorities, viva and power, central government. And when central government is moving into your village, taking you from your village and going to give you a shanty town, you want to complain. But that is what your voter's card is saying. That's actually the meaning of your voter's card. If you don't know what your voter's card means, take your pace now and look at it. What do you see? You only see power to vote, right? Because some of you think you hate SWAPO enough, and now you went into new political parties. Well, whether you are a member of SWAPO or a member of what political party, you have one thing in common. You are calling for the central government to come into your room through your voter's card. So when you see them approaching there in your village, don't complain because your voter's card has given them power. But we have a problem, because even if we build houses, we are still coming back to one thing. Who can afford to live? Look, there is nothing in this world that does not speak to affordability. There is nothing in this world that does not speak to affordability. Even women, if you cannot afford a girlfriend, you stay out. So you cannot afford a girlfriend, you stay out. Even the oxygen that we breathe is because we can afford to do that. The moment we can no longer afford, we are out. That's why we call dying, because that means you are no longer able to afford to live in this world. You go out. And when you go out, you can't afford to come back here. So there's nothing for free, really, if we think carefully. And when we are talking about housing, the government is not talking about free housing here. Even if the government talks about dignified free, you know, dignified free house, free, dignified housing, it's not free. They still look at your payslip. You still need to have a payslip to be able to afford the house. So if you don't have a pay slip and you don't have money, you are not part of what government is talking about here. Just understand that. So whoever is trying to sell you a dream to think that you qualify to have a house just because you are a Namibian citizen, that's a lie. Your Namibian citizenship alone cannot qualify you to have a house. You need to afford paying for that house. So, your citizenship, your voter's card, your membership card of your political party, those things don't qualify you to have a house. House is economic. We are talking about economics now. Can you afford? If no, then goodbye. That's how brutal the situation is. So I went to the bank one day and I was asking to be connected to online banking. And I found a banking person said, how are you going to use the banking line if you're blind? You're wasting our time. So that person thought they were brutal until I became more brutal than them. Because life is about affordability. Can you afford to do
ShopRite's birthday is in the major league with major low prices. Get 750 mils Nola sunflower oil, only $29.99. 5 kg nice rice parboiled rice for $89.99. And 5 kg Pokomo fit cook wheat flour, just $72.99. Valid until 23 August 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's major league birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 and weekly gift cards with ShopRite. Buy any three participating products, WhatsApp the code on your till slip, and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
So, life is very brutal. Don't be deceived by political statements. Because most of us are just in for political statements. Build housing for everyone. Dignified house for everyone. We are going to improve life for every Namibian. It's not true. It's not true. You need to understand the word everyone. It does not mean all of you. It just means everyone that can afford. So, don't be deceived by terms and English language. You need to always have a dictionary when you are hearing a politician speak. And not only a dictionary, you need to have a commentary. I don't know whether English as a commentary. Because they don't say what they look, they don't, how can I put it? You know, I'm short of words. But when you hear the word everyone, it does not mean you are part of that. If you cannot afford, you are not the everyone they are talking about. So now, do we say then, can we say, okay, fine. Do we then have hope? Some of us that are poor, we cannot afford. Hope can only come when you can afford to work hard and earn something. But if not, we don't have hope. Because there is no house that is going to be built unless otherwise by charity. That somebody builds a house and gives it to you. But when you are talking about economically, when you are talking about the government economics or whatever, even the government saying they are going to collaborate with the private sector. The government is not going to lower the expectation of a private sector as far as profit is concerned. The government is still going to allow the private sector to make profit. Okay, if you want to debate with me, I want to take you back to March 2020. You know, Namibia just heard South Africa saying they have $1 trillion, what did they call it? They used the term, and then Namibia immediately came up with 8.1 billion. Apparently they are going to give it to businesses. Where is that 8.1 billion? All of you that were doing business, that were doing design, you thought because you are doing business, the money is yours. You are going to get money from government. No. Who got that money? Who got that money of the 8.1 billion? Was it austerity? They used a certain term, something like package or something like a, I just forgot the term that they used because that term was just a copy and paste from South Africa and from America. Because America is the one that started with the money to stabilize businesses. And then South Africa came up with 1 trillion. Namibia, 8.1 billion. Where is the money? Who got that money? Because all the business people that I know, I asked them, guys, how much money did you get? They say they did not get that money. But where is the money? Where is the 8.1 billion that was given for business? It was stabilizing what? You ask the former Minister of Finance. They used a certain very difficult terminology. I just forgot about it. So that is to show you that whenever the government says everyone, it does not mean you are part of it. Be careful. So just like, you know, I observe in mothers that they have favorite children. You know, when they talk about You see, my grandmother will give sugar to somebody and no sugar to another person. So you don't compare yourself with anyone. The only unifying card here that we have is affordability. Whether or not we can afford. Just look at the mass housing. Who is occupying, who is part of the mass housing now? Are those people that can afford to pay for that house. Even one of the most effective housing model that is being, you know, that is going on now, that is called the Sheikh Bella. You still register, but you need to give something. If you don't have money, you cannot be part of that. If you don't have money, you cannot be part of that. That is what you are talking about. Okay. Let me tie this with another story. The Minister of Works and Transport, Veiko Nekundi, has directed, you know, PAMA to make sure that the government makes revenue out of its assets. You know, government must make money out of the assets. One of the targeted areas are government flats, that people are occupying those flats and they are not paying. Those flats are not making money. So they must make money. So that is, but everything is happening in silos. You know, all this government, you know, the Public Asset Management Agency of Namibia, Namibia Planning Commission, Bank of Namibia, you know, GIPF, NHE, they come together and sit down and say, let's have one model of operation, one integrated model. Now, NHE is there. Namibia Planning Commission is there. Bank of Namibia is this side. It's like a person. You are one, but your leg is there. Your arm is this side, your foot, the other side, all parts are not in. You think you can walk? You can never walk. You can only walk if those parts come together. That's when you can stand as a human being. But if you are seated there, your arm is in the kitchen, your foot is in the bathroom, your other foot is in the backyard, your head is in the room, your nose is in the other room, you see, you are not functioning. You are divided. And that's how government is. Government is not one thing. Government is 20 things, and each is saying, each has a mouth. That's a problem. Each has a mouth. Now, you see, NHE saying, we are going to fight homelessness. How are you going to fight homelessness if you are bailed out all the time? So, that's why I'm saying there must be one brain. All these entities should come together, create one integrated model and plan and execute it. Take all these people that are renting and they cannot afford housing through the banks. Take them. Create your own system. A government housing system. A Namibian housing system. Revamp the NHE because it's a Namibian, it's a state-owned, enterprise or state-owned, a state-owned enterprise. Revamp it. Let them sit with Namibia Planning Commission. Let them sit with Bank of Namibia. Let them sit with GIPF. And then you have, public asset management of Namibia there. Bring all this thing together. Build one body. And have one plan. What is a Namibian plan when it comes to the housing, to the housing problem? It's a disintegrated plan. It's not coordinated. It's not coordinated because each entity has its own mouth. And there's, it's like you are one body, but you have many mouths. The finger, also at your finger, there's a mouth. And you have another mouth on your toes. One of your left or right toe has a mouth. You are not going to speak the same language. Or you have many heads. You are not going to think the same. The problem with government is that government is not thinking the same. Not many days ago, I was telling you about Namibia Planning Commission and Namibian hydrogen project, talking about decarbonization, when Bank of Namibia is holding a seminar on oil and gas. Because every entity has a brain of its own. That's why they are thinking differently, and they are moving 1 foot ahead and 10 feet backward. So until there is a proper coordination and the proper planning, we will be sitting here talking about bigger plans. We'll go old. And our children will also grow old. We'll never see what we are talking about. Because we talk about the walk. And then we don't walk about the talk. Other countries are walking the path. And then they arrive. And then that's when they are talking. That's when they will start talking about their journey. But in Africa, we are good at talking about journeys we have not yet walked. We are good at talking about journeys we will never walk. Journeys that we have never walked. Journeys that we are never walking. And journeys that we will never walk. We are busy talking about them. But some people are walking. They are walking what they will not talk about. Some people don't talk about what they are walking. But we don't walk about. Some people are walking and they are not talking. We are talking, but not walking. That's what makes us still talk about basic things. Have you heard an African, or a Namibian official going to United Nations General Assembly? Even the Namibian president. When we go there, even at international platforms, and we are given the mic to speak, we will still talk about water. How water needs to be. We give water to everyone, housing to everyone, and everyone. We're talking about the basic things that people have solved 200, 300 years ago. That's what we are still talking about. because we are good at talking about the walk. We are good at talking about the journeys that we are failing to walk. So, good luck on the housing issue. But you need to know that even if the houses are built, those houses will be built for those that can afford the houses. So we are going for a short break, and we come back, we get into another story.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Okay. We now get into another story, but this story is not part of the it's not part of the paper, but it's a very important story. I'm going to get to the paper. I'm still having three stories in there. But before I get to that, to our paper, this story, there's been a consultation on the issue of Babwata, you know, Babwata National Park. To whom does it really belong? That is the consultation that was supposed to take place. But the Hambukushu Traditional Authority dictated that the venue should be at their own traditional authority, place. Now, the urban minister, James Sankwasa, went to Rundu. And the governor of Zambezi and some traditional authorities from Zambezi also came, or traditional authority officials. So, the Hambukushu refused to come because they say anything about Babwata must be discussed in their settings. Then the minister said, nope, the meeting will go on without the Hambukushu traditional authority officials, because this is not a traditional authority meeting, it's a government meeting. So it's a government consultative meeting. It is not organized by the traditional authority. Okay. Now there are two major problems. Number one, the Hambukushu is claiming that the Babwata is theirs. You know, falls under their jurisdiction. Both now and in the time past. Even the pre-colonial history. Is that true? We'll see. Another problem is that, okay, there is now There are three problems, in fact. There is the minister, James Sankwasa, where he is from Zambezi, which is also fighting for the area. It's also claiming that the area belongs to Zambezi. Now, is he really partial in his judgment? Or is he going to be partial in his judgment? Or is it already a decided, a decided issue? That is yet to be seen, how the minister will handle this case. Then, there is also an impression that the Hambukusha Traditional Authority has created. Because now they have shown everyone that they are the ones that have a problem. So they have shown everyone that they are now the ones that are a problem for refusing to attend the meeting in Rundu, because they consider that the venue was inappropriate, since this is talking about their area. It was supposed to be in their venue, but was meeting. The minister is arguing. Is the minister correct by arguing to say the ministry, the venue should not change because the meeting is not a traditional authority meeting, it's a government meeting? Well, I will leave the ball to be in your court as far as getting to the conclusion on whether or not the minister is correct. But all I know is that it will depend on how the minister will handle this issue. That will determine whether or not the minister is partial or, biased. Well, there is a feeling that Zambezi has lost a lot of, land to Kavango. And some people suggest that Zambezi is losing land and Kavango is gaining land. But the land that Kavango is gaining is not historically, Kavango. But there is a difference that we need to make. There is a difference between geographical location and administrative location. So the Delimitation Commission is administrative in nature, because the reason why in the 90s Mukwe was part of Kaprivi, but to travel from Mukwe to Katima is almost 200 kilometers. It is more further than from Mukwe to Rundu. So that's why Mukwe constituency was said Mukwe must go to Rundu or to Kavango. That is administrative. But then the problem is that automatically administrative is interpreted to be geographic. So that's where the problem is. And that's why some people say we are losing land. Certain regions are expanding to the expense of others, of other regions. Certain regions are shrinking. But that is fair enough to say We are talking about access to services, to government services. And if you say it is 200 kilometers from Mukwe, almost to Katima, then if you want those people in Mukwe to have access to services, you have to take them where the services are near. So that's where the problem is. The delimitation process or delimitation exercise is one complex issue that always very sensitive. So when we're talking about Babata National Park, it was called the Caprivi. Was it the one that was called the Caprivi Game Park? Yes. It used to be called the Caprivi Game Park before. Now, Babata, when we are to speak the correct history, if we are to really speak the true history of what Babata is, or what, to who was in Babata before, even the prehistorical, the pre-colonial era, I would say that the Hambukusu Tradition Authority is right, is correct to claim jurisdiction over.
What's not to love about USAVE's special mid-August combo? For just 219 Namibian dollars, you can get 5 bags of essential foods, 2.5 kilos of Champion Super Maize Meal, 5 kilos Bokomo Fit Cook Flour, 2 kilogram Nice Rice, 1 kilo Selected Grande Pasta, and 2 kilograms Marathon Sugar. That's just 219 Namibian dollars for 5 bags of essential products. Yes, we all save at USAVE.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
So I would say that the Hambukusu Traditional Authority is correct to claim jurisdiction over Babata. Because in 16th century, we need to go back to history and we look at who shared the border with whom. So when it comes to the jurisdiction, and we talk about the traditional authority, Babata is part of the Hambukusu. But when you're talking about the geographical location of the area, Babata was part of Caprivi. Okay? So Babata was part of Caprivi when it comes to the geographical location. But when it comes to delimitation commission, Babata may be part of Kavango. So Kavango cannot historically claim ownership over Babata. But when we talk about the delimitation commission, that's where we can say it is in Kavango by virtue of the delimitation commission, how it was, you know, demarcated, regional demarcation. but the geographical location of the place. It is in Zambezi, and it is part of Zambezi, or it was part of Caprivi. So that's how complicated the situation is. And how the government is going to solve this issue? Well, we are yet to see what they are going to do. Because you see, that's why you go, if you go to Oshikoto, Ohangwena, Oshana, and Omsati, you will see that Ongenga, you would want to believe that Ongenga is part of Ohangwena, right? But Ongenga is part of Omsati. It is in Omsati region. And then you go to villages like, Ekongola, for example. Ekongola, we would say it's part of Ohangwena, but it's in Ohangwena, but it's part of Ondonga. So you will find certain villages, one village is Ondonga, the other one is Ukwanyama. So the problem is that government does not listen. If there is anybody that doesn't listen to local indigenous people's advice, is government officials. And they keep making this blunder that, continue to create problems within traditional authorities. It is government officials that don't listen. The people that involve when it comes to these things, delimitation commission is supposed to come from advice, through advice from headmen and chiefs of the area, looking at also at the historical accounts. But there is also a problem, because the chiefs and the headmen, they also give oral history or oral historical accounts, which may be biased depending on who is giving it. Because there are tribes that are claiming to have arrived first in the area, which is not true. You see, that's the reason why, even when you're talking about Zambezi, that's the reason why the history of Zambezi or Caprivi brings fights. Because when you are talking about Caprivi and Zambezi, there is no way you can ever talk about Mafwes and Subias. And that is already a fight that you are bringing. Because the Mafwes, who have come later than everyone else, they are now claiming to have come earlier. And they claim Caprivi to be theirs completely. And then that becomes a problem. Because if you look at the history, you go into the 16th century, there was no tribe called Mafwe yet at that point. In fact, by that time, Mwanambinyi, as the Lozi king, did not even yet arrive in that area. So now this leaves you with a problem. Now you have the three tribes, the Barakwenas, which are the Kwes, which are the first in the area. And most of the time, the Bantu languages are sidelining the indigenous San community, which are the first in the area. If we are talking about even Babwata itself, the Mbukushus, when they arrive around that area in the late 15th century, with whom did they share borders? I think you are going to find that the Mbukushu would have at least a correct and reliable historical account, because they are going to tell you with whom they shared borders or boundaries when they arrived in that area. So, this now brings us to a situation where you have San communities that are being sidelined, and then you have Bantu communities that are fighting for land that they are saying is theirs historically. But most of the lands that we are talking about is Bantu occupied. They are not Bantu lands, because Bantu is coming from somewhere else. So the people that are supposed to fight for Bwabwata are not even the Hambukushu. The people that are supposed to fight for the Bwabwata are not the Subias. Even though the Subias have come earlier than anyone else, they were not having jurisdiction over Bwabwata area, that side. The Subias mostly controlled the so-called Eastern Kaprivi Zipfeld. And that is also debatable looking at, depending on who is talking about the history. Like I said. So the Mafois were part of the Lozi, which is also not true, because the Mafois were just conquered by the Lozi. The Mafois are coming from the Shanjo tribes that, if I'm not mistaken, were part of the Tokalea. And the Tokalea were already in that area before the Luyanas arrived. Before the Lozis came, they found Tokaleas, the Tongas, they found Subias, they found the Mbukushus in that area. And they just conquered it. And now we are talking about Lozi as if they are the ones that came in first. The Lozis just conquered the area and subdued most of the tribes there that they found. But that does not mean the area is theirs. They just subdued the tribes they found. So that's why this complicated kind of history is almost equivalent to the Palestine issue. That's why the Palestine issue is never ending. Because the Arabs are saying they are the Palestine is theirs. But if you look at where the Arabs are coming from historically, you know, Palestine is not Arabic. Palestine belonged to the Philistines and to the Jebusites. So, but because they also came, the Arabs came and conquered the area, now they say it's theirs. So Israel also came and conquered the area. Israel conquered those areas, destroyed all the tribes, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Jebusites, including the Philistines. And they are also claiming that it's their land. So that's how it becomes, you know, a bit problematic. So how the minister is going to handle this situation will determine whether or not he's partial or biased. So the only person that is at crossroads when it comes to this issue is a minister of urban and rural, you know, development. Because now everybody's counting on how he's going to conduct himself trying to solve this problem. So that's how complicated the story is. That's how complicated this issue is. Because when you get into the history, you will find out who really, but the truth is just plain. We are not even supposed to talk about who, you know, whose jurisdiction does Bwabwata falls under. We know already that Bwabwata is Hambukushu traditional authorities. The Hambukushu came up to Katima in the 16th century. They shared borders with the Subias and the Mayai in that area. So, even when the Ambukusu said Kongola is part of them, we can debate that. But it just depends on it was part of them when. Because now we have what we call the Mashi and Chinchimani. And Mashi never also existed. It is a new traditional authority. So Chinchimani can also say, look, we don't recognize Mashi. Just like the Subias can also say we don't recognize Chinchimani. Because Chinchimani is new compared to Subias. And Mayuni and, Mashi is also new compared to Chinchimani. And you see, that's where the problem is. So, certain traditional authorities just came after independence. They did not exist in the pre-colonial history. Now, if you came after independence as a traditional authority, the way you fight for land must be different. Because you never existed yesterday. You were born today. You exist because of human rights. Okay? So, like, if we are talking about the kingdoms that really existed, we are talking about the Ambukusu. The Ambukusu is older than the Mafwe kingdom. And we are talking about the Subia that are older than the Mbukusu, and both Mbukusu and Mafwe. And then we talk about the Kwe, who are older than all of them. So that's why it becomes complicated that who is fighting for what and when? When did you rule over this place? If you are talking about ruling. So if the Kwe today say Kaprivi is theirs, will you debate as a Subia? You found the quays in the Kaprivi area. So, and if the Subias will say Kaprivi is theirs, the Mafwes will also fight. Say no. But the Mafwes found the Subias and the quays and the Mbukushus in the Kaprivi area. Now, that's a bit sensitive, right? But we need to speak it as it is. In fact, when I'm speaking like this, I'm not biased toward anyone. I'm just pointing to historical facts. In 1909, there was a German leader, this German guy called Stredhoff. I only know his first name. And in 1909, there was another German guy. His name is Ugo Hahn, who came to the Ovambo area and confused the Ovambo, kingdom structure by installing the so-called paramount, chieftainships. They used to call him Shongola, Shwambo, Ugo Hahn. You know him very well. So, and because the Ndonga kingdom was found in order, so it was the only kingdom that was found in order in the north. That's why it was left intact. Maybe Ugo Hahn has done one or two damage, but not compared to what he did around the Okwambi and the rest. You will also say I'm biased. So, when now, if we are going back to who did what where, that history will be complicated because it is not a one-sided thing. You have to look at the dispensations, because during the first dispensation, of course, we can say certain tribes did not exist. But that does not negate the fact that they exist now, and they have jurisdiction over those areas too. Because when Stredhoff came, he found there was no king around the Subias, because the king just died and the one to take over was still a young boy. And when he went the other side at the Mafwes, the Mafwes were not by that time a kingdom. It was a sub, that was under the Lozis. In fact, almost 50, maybe 49 years before, the Lozi king Sipopa, he's the one that appointed Mamili, who was called Kavainda, the one they call Kavende, but he's not Kavende, he's Kavainda, to be like an officer there, who was like an ambassador in the area. So when the Germans came and they found that there was no king, they threatened to say, we are going to give you the Namas and Hereros to rule over you. And then the people refused. That's when it was set up to say Mamili must be the king or the chief. Not even king, but chief, paramount chief. And then they created what's called the Bafwe Baye Kingdom, which was nullified in 1970, around the 1975, by the Mafwe king. I think it was the chief Muhinda. And then after independence, the Maye opted out to set up their own chieftainship. And they complained. And this, of course, that was a political move. There was a reason why it was easy for them to break away. That's another history. But all in all, we can say that the Hambukusho claim of the area is correct historically. And the Kavango claim of the area is correct administratively. And the Zambezi claim of Bwabwata is correct geographically. So now it will depend on what the government is going to do. You see, the Mbukushus are correct. It's their place. Bwabwata has always been Hambukushu. Nobody with correct history can debate that. So, but it was Hambukushu in Kaprivi. Then, with administrative, whatever, that's when it became Kavango, in Kavango East. So, maybe, to avoid this thing of regionalism and whatever, The government might just create a 15th region between Rundu and Katima. Just create it and name it Kaza. Kaza region. And then you are done. So create a 15th region there that belongs to no one. It doesn't belong to Kavango. It doesn't belong to Zambezi. And then you have neutralized the problem once and for all. They were not even supposed to divide the Kavangos, to say Kavango East and Kavango West. No. That was a wrong move from the government. The government was just supposed to create a 14th region between Kavango and Zambezi and named it Kaza. That was supposed to have solved the whole issue. Now we will keep going back and forth fighting for land. This land belongs to where? This one belongs to what? We are wasting time with those things. But oh well. That will now depend on how the minister and government is going to handle the issue. We just need to get popcorns and sit and watch. All right. It is 6 minutes to 8. 8 o'clock, I'm going to open the lines. When you come in, I want to hear your views. I want to hear your views. The issue of boundaries is not only about Zambezi and Kavango. We also have that boundary in Ohangwena, Oshkoto, Msati, Oshana. Yeah, but what makes it easier there is because the people are of one ethnic group. They almost speak the same language, so there's no difference. There's no problem. And they are not like Kavango and Zambezi. Huh? Yeah. But you see, that's where you find this is the thing of traditional authorities. That it's good that now I think there is order. Because you cannot just come in on Ndangwa and then you are quite a number of people, and then you think apparently because you are many there, you want to be allowed to establish a traditional authority in the traditional authority. You see, you want to be allowed to establish a chieftainship or a chieftaincy in a chieftaincy, or to build a house in a house. That's a confused democratic right. So I have heard how the issue was going on in Kavango, where, you know, the Nyemba people were asking for wanting to have, you know, their language also spoken in the, you know, Kavango, you know, radio station or Wato. And then, you know, there was a very heated argument on radio that day. I was listening. And then one person came and spoke and said, look, where is your traditional authority? Because you cannot claim land here in Kavango. We have Shambu or Mbunza, and then we have the Dwiriku, and then we have the Bakwangari there, the Kwangari, and then we have the Hambukushu. So where is the Banyemba land? Nowhere. So how do you want to be a traditional authority when you don't have a land, ancestral land there? You can't be a traditional authority. Because a traditional authority is connected to the umbilical cord, which is an ancestral land. We know where chief where Hompa is buried. Mfumu is buried there. We know where Mkwanilwa, Ubakwanilwa, Akwanilwa, they are buried. That's an ancestral land. That's a land that, you know, on which a traditional authority is established. You can't establish a traditional authority on a non-existent ancestral land. That's not a traditional authority. So in Ondangwa, there is another community, the Mashaka. And apparently they must also be recognized as a traditional authority. That to me is a confused democratic right. Okay, to me that one is a confused democratic right, because you cannot establish a shop in a shop. So Eagle FM cannot be France FM at the same time. No, if France wants an FM, he must get out of Eagle completely and establish his own. So there's no way you can create a kingdom in another kingdom. It does not work. So that is a confused democratic right, even if it is ratified by parliament or agreed to by the minister. That is an agreed to.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 ml Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
So that is a confused democratic right. But yeah, there are those things that sometimes can arise and bring a bit of problem if they are not handled properly. Right. The number in studio is 083-288-401. This is our last hour. This is our last hour. What do you have to say? Come through. Let me hear your point. 081-08-32-888-401. Yes.
Yes, Dr. Frank.
Yes. How are you saying?
How are you?
Good.
Let me quickly comment on the housing land and maybe the issue of the Babata there.
Yeah.
You know, as long as we put middlemen to construct a house and to service land, housing and land will never be affordable. It will only, because that is a market. That's a market. That's commercial. It can only be afforded by the people who have the means. But even those that are going to afford them, it will be kind of an exploitative, you know, mathematics. And those who want to, because you struggle to get that house. When you get it, you are unable to keep up the house, paying rent, home loan, and all the things. It's simply because you put a middleman there. I give an example to say, the reason why you see that in the traditional setting, you don't find the people say there's no land and they are not complaining that the chief are not building them houses. It's simple because the mandate of the king and the chief are very clear. It's to give the land to the people and the people build their own houses according to the standards of the customary title. And in line also with what they can afford to build their house. Now, the mandate of the state. Ne? As far as urban land is concerned, through the Minister of Urban and Rural Development and the local authority, is to sell the land and give the land to the people. And people build the houses in line with the building standard of that of any local authority. The problem is when we want to make business, when we want to commercial house. When house shelter is a basic need, that's where the problem is. So whatever you are seeing there, it cannot work. When it works through Be Together, you can see the type of the houses they are building for the people. Sometimes they build what? A toilet. Ne? And that's it. Sometimes they build one bedroom.
Because that is what you can afford.
Because it's a market. It's commercial. It's a commercial because you put a proper developer or proper developer sector. A PPP, public partnership, which is a political oriented commercial, you know, market. You see, you have to remove those things first if you want things to work. Just let me give you a practical example that France made. When you are working for the government, the lowest person maybe will get up to 700 or 900 subsidy, ne? Loan, if you have the house. But he, if that person could be given an F that cost even 60,000 or 100,000, for argument's sake, he still have 600 in his pocket to build the house. You understand? Then when you give him that land, he can go get even 300,000 or 400 from the bank as a loan and build his own house. Or he can get that personal loan and get the brother to build the house according to the standard of the municipality. The person insists. But the problem is when the person you want to build people houses for, houses, but who build your house? You build it yourself. You understand? That is the mindset of politicians. And the public must be very clever about that. When you see the politicians' houses and property developers, they build their own house according to their own needs and choice and standard. Now they want to build people houses. It can never be work like that if we want to solve the housing. That's why a person at a market value and a commercial value, he cannot afford a house of water of 800,000. Next. But when you said, this is the subsidy that you have qualified for the government, then this is the land, this is the price of the land, which is even, can be even like 40,000. Then you buy it through the subsidy. Then you choose who, and you find where you get the money. Then we can talk. And it will be cheaper. Instead of just finding already, so the house is 2.5. But it's not the value of it. You cannot afford it. If you afford it, you will not sustain it. You will be like, it's an exploited something. So there, on the question of land, my dear, and housing, the government must go back to the mandate of the state, must uphold the mandate of the state to give service land to the people and to give land to the people in the rural area. That's the mathematics. You don't need a middleman there. And sometimes they will tell you that the France is, no, local authority has no capacity, has no money. If you want to hear the insight of a century, just tell people that the state or the government does not have money, but private people have money. That means that the sovereignty. Because where does the private person, you mean now the private people have more money, they are more powerful than the state. That is not a state if that something is happening like that. That's why you see the state, the government is losing money and private people are not losing money. Why? Because the private are going in the government to steal money from the state for themselves. There is no way you say the state has no money. Apparently the capacity. is because all the engineer, all the capacity that you have, they are in the market. The same way the private get it in the market. It's the same way the government can get it. But if somebody say, look, there's no capacity, there's no engineer, look, that's a lie. It's a way to create a market now for the private. And that's what people are pushing. You see? If the private company can afford to get an engineer to go to the bank and get a loan, and you think apparently the government cannot do, that's a total lie. It can do it. In a democratic society like this, no. It's a lie. It's a manipulation of a politician, you know, like that. When my second point, let's go to Babata issue.
Yes, I can hear you.
Look, we can say whatever you want to say, but there is one point to say, or the jurisdiction and the ownership of anything, including the land and the property, is decided by power and public consent only. Ne? By two things, by power and by public consent. If you don't have the power, you cannot decide that. If there's no public consent, you cannot find sorghum. I can give you an example, like for instance, Etosha and all those areas, Grootfontein, ne? Ocho there. It was on Ndonga land. Ne? How did we lose it? Because we were not powerful. Because public consent was not there, it was not democracy. We lost it through, because the Germans, maybe they have arms and something. Even the other governments that came over, the Germans came, the upper side came in, even the post-independent government leaders came in. They sustained the status quo. We lost that thing. That's why when you say, what you call Etosha, that thing is not Etosha. Etosha, to choose. It's a way of rephrasing it so that they wanted the original name. If you want to erase history, you start changing the names, the original names of the places. Because when you replace it, it will no longer say who was the original person there. If I ask you, what does a Babata mean? Which language is that?
Well, Babata is, everyone is claiming it's their language.
What does Babata mean and in which language?
Well, it means boil water, like boiling, when something is boiling.
Which language is that?
Well, it's Bosi, Fwe, Subia, Mbukushu. It's a combination. Oh.
Look, it tells you that that land belongs to all of them. You understand? That's why when we said Etosha, hey, makashi Etosha, Etosha janungwa bwa jatokaza fusira jafetoji samani. Etosha mono okwanirwa no marenga toimwe tokato samo oshinamo nishwahara. Because there are plenty there. Etosha. Then these people have to change because they want to hide the history so that it must not have a meaning. But for you to claim ownership, that's how they change the things. So there, what is needed there, it's a public consent. And we are telling you, when we talk about history on the land issue, sometimes there is a point where we have to draw the line and start from there, ne? And we leave the rest behind. Why? Because you are not going to finish. And you are not going to move ahead because you will be stuck in that conflict. That is where even when the constitution was created, after all the land dispossessions that have took place in the country and the borders, they say, For us to save time, let's just respect the borders that are there. And also, let's just recognize the property rights as they are. Because if we start with that, we are not going to finish. We are going to go back to the Stone Age there where you try to... I was there, as you put it, said, politely there, we are saying now. Are you now going to decide on the geography? Man? Or you are going to the history of the time period to say, look, this one came this time. Between the two variables now, which one is bigger than the others? Which one is superior and which? If they are all equal, then what? You find that you don't have the answer. So there, we are in a democratic society. We must go by public consent. Ne? And we must also believe that you cannot create a house within a house. It cannot be, that is a confuse. When you said, Mashaka, no, there is no people in Mashaka claiming traditional solitude. It can never be happening. Because we all know, those Ibudu you see there, Mashaka, they come around 1950-something there. Ne? My uncle, Kwedi Kwashibute, he's the one who allowed those people to come there. Ne? Because he was a headman there. So, let's just say to say, what are we doing with the land? Let's forget about all those nonsense that we are talking, trying to say. Let us make land productive if you want to move as a society. Ownership alone, because I'm telling you, even if you say this is your land, I'm telling you, in a labor, whoever claiming that this is your land, so, let's just respect each other here and respect the history that is there now. To say, look, if we all say, look, that one belong to what? The Babata belong traditionally, belong to the what? To the Mbukusho. Let it be like that. And the other mistake is the same that you also point out, that the friends will say, look, governments sometimes, they are making mistakes. Because they don't want to respect, because they are also using those colonial mindset to hide the history. Ne? To say, because they don't want to respect the traditional boundaries of tribes. That's where the problem is. It must be respected. It must be respected. The traditional boundary of the tribes must be respected. Otherwise, we are going to create problems over and over. Yeah, we all know the whole 70% of Ukwanyama is in Angola. What you call Oshikango there and Ngenga, that's Ukwambi. So we must respect people, and we must not try this Israel's way of doing like expansion. Their Zionist, you know, mindset of expansion in other people's land. And you want to claim ownership. And you want to rename, you know, you want to rename places. Because you want to hide history. To say maybe you were the one there. Look, if I came from here and I go to China, I will never claim ownership of the Chinese land or anything. Or culture or try to be. No. I have to live like the Chinese. Because I go to them. And you cannot also force people. And this is where government is so wrong. To say, look, you cannot be, ne? For instance, we are in children in Ndonga. But they have been taught to Shwanyama. That's total nonsense. It cannot be like that. If you are in Okanyama, then you jurisdiction. You have to be taught to Shwanyama. It's a mandatory. But you cannot be in Karas Nama there. But you want to say, look, Namas must be taught Oshindong. No. You see, but if you bid, for instance, like boarding school, like in Windhoek, then we can talk. Because Windhoek is a center of everything. You can bid school where you have classes for Sherero, everybody's there. and everybody choose which language you want to teach. But when you are in Ukwanyama, then you say no jurisdiction, or when you're in a Kavango jurisdiction, then you say, look, children must be taught in Oshindonga, in Kavango, in Kaprivi, like in Zambezi. That's totally wrong. If you go there, you must live like the Mafia. If you are among the Mafias, you must comply to the Mafias, cultures and everything. You cannot claim to be taught Oshindonga simply because I know you are in Masuvia. It's your democratic right. That is not the right. That is not the right. That is not the right. No. Respect where you are and comply to the rules that are there. According to the tribe, to the culture of that. You cannot come in and to say, look, because I'm a member and we have been there for too long, we also need that. In whose house? In whose house? No. Respect. If we know, then we are saying, just to conclude that, friends, is when we are saying, look, you know when that Eliaka Hangala said, there are ministers who remind them to say, I'm your minister. Ne? I'm telling you, we must respect public consent.
No, when you but you see, ministers are correct to remind CEOs, because CEOs also sometimes want to act like mini gods. The issue we have seen with CEO of Katima refusing orders from the line minister was wrong. You see, that's why the minister comes in and he will have to remind you that he's your minister, because sometimes you are also big in age. And they are young. So the only line of defense they have is their position.
You must understand the language behind the Mr. Angala. You know where is the problem? This one, that minister that he is referring to, is threatening the interest, the business interest of the people if they don't want to kneel to his knees. That's what he's telling them. What you are saying is correct in the other angle, but the angle that I'm telling you here is to say that minister is threatening the interest, the business interest of those people if they are not kneeling to his demand. Whatever the demand that say, but we are saying now, what I'm trying to say, look, in a state governance, in this democracy that we are, there is no bosses, there is no here. There is only public consent. You understand? That's why I said that the Mbukushu are right not to go there. Why? Because Babata is them, is theirs. If you want, you must come to them. Ne? In the historical, you know, that we have now, ne? Is there. So they cannot move. So you, if you think you can send them a letter and you want them to go to you, you wanted to say maybe, no, because some government is bigger than what? You want to say the minister is bigger than the chief. It cannot work. There's no subordinate there. And that is where the problem we have in the society. Because we live in a society that is superiority and subordinate. There's no such a mathematics in democracy. There is only public consent. Public consent has no superiority or subordinate. No.
All right.
That's why if you want things to move, you could have gone there and discuss it. So this is what you're talking. But sending a letter, that is, you are saying you are the boss. Then they said, no, they are subordinate. The minister of rural and urban rural development, in terms of the law, is not the boss, is not the chief, is not the superior of the Tanzanian leaders. No, that is not in democracy. Because in democracy, there is only public consent. There's no power. If you use power, you can give remos. Who are now much power working?
All right. You have might
there will be nothing there.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you very much. Okay. 083-2388-401. That's the number in studio. The Mbuku shoes are saying, look, it's power plus power here. The lower power will always have to bow. Because to them, the letter sign sounded like a summon, like they are summoned. But at the end of the day, they have also presented the public view that seems to give them an impression, to give an impression to the society that the Mbuhambukoshu are the ones that are having a problem. Because they defied government by not attending the meeting. So we look at it in two ways. Them, how they interpreted the letter is different from how society and public opinion interpret their actions. You know, when, you know, this thing of response, it's like you are in a pitch, you know, playing soccer, playing football, in a football pitch. And then while you are playing, somebody deliberately kicks you. Bam. And by that time you are kicked, the referee was not looking. Just for you to kick the guy back and you get a yellow card or a red card. So response is dangerous sometimes. Response is very dangerous. Because by the time you respond, when somebody's kicking you in a football pitch, he kicks you, bam. And then you also decide, I'm going to kick him back. The time you kick him back, that is the time the referee is on you. And you get a red card. But who kicked you? What did you do? Did you start the kick? No, it was a response. But you responded at the wrong time. Or at the right time. For the referee to show the world that he's a no-nonsense, a referee. Morning.
Good morning, Franz. How are you? That's Franz.
Good, how are you?
Thank you. Take a go for now, Mr. Pokepunya, Baranga Jande, Tutura Mario Mongbakaya, to sing Maria to Tadimba.
No problem. Just go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you very much, Tati France, for the presentation. I don't know whether it was yesterday or the day before yesterday when you were talking about coexistence. Coexistence. So my understanding there was that what you were implying to is that people should live together, so irrespective of their cultures and all these things, and their political affiliation and all these other area issues, just like that Tekwedi said there that of course, so you should know your identity of your culture, your identity, your true identity, but of course you can still live together. Like you said, where are you going to end if everyone has to claim now, yes, this is my ancestral land, this what, and things like that. With all these things, despite all those things, does not mean that you should not address the social and the economic challenges faced by the people, especially in the housing. So this was just a comment on the issue of the Babata and the Tangpasa and all those traditional authority and all those people that So the issue of housing, the model. You have actually spoken well on the model that can be viable in addressing these housing problems. So you mentioned about administrative, although this administrative bottlenecks, you did not mention it perhaps in the context of the addressing the housing issues, problems. So because it's clear that there are also administrative barriers. Some are unfair, some are, you know, all these kind of things. So but the model that can well coordinate and be coordinated where stakeholders are there, of course it's there, it can be found. So the capital, what is it, capital finance, capital project, the one that is run and managed by, led and managed by the doctor you mentioned there, it's a good idea. So there's too much money there. But even people who have got money, like you said, cannot have that access. And things need to be facilitated in a very fair administrative manner. So, and it is actually, I don't know where the problem is, because there was a time also when I was reading in some of these manifestos and during those, especially SWAPO manifesto, where they were talking about that anyone can still can get money or can buy a house or a dwelling through GIPS.
Rimonenea kololo internet yendelela to iturirwa moshari. Ove to hupifanata ngoshimaru ashifike pedola da Namibia ma vera varino mathele eriatano. Okujame fikula tetela aguste fia mama fukero milongo natua September. Itoka pula ufuto shimaru asho numba okuturirwa mwea kololo engenge oeli shangifo kontrakta keshe yo Peratus Fiber ile Skyfi. Oto turirwa mwea kololo ripelo internet. Kupifa fio pedola da Namibia ma vera varino mathele eriatano. Omeumbo ilo mongeshefa ya kulo only nongushu. Talela po peratus.africa/Namibia. Nde toli shangifanena.
ShopRite's birthday is in the major league with major low prices. Get 4kg real good IQF chicken, mixed portion, only 194 Namibian dollars 99. 5kg marathon white sugar for 99 Namibian dollars 99. And 5kg top score super maize meal, just 69 Namibian dollars 99. Valid until 23 August 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's major league birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 Namibian dollars and weekly gift cards with ShopRite. Buy any three participating products, WhatsApp the code on your till slip, and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite.
Yes, please go ahead.
I might be speaking under correction, but I think I've heard and read about that. But anyone who can, maybe whether you are working in ShopRite or whatever, you do make that reference most of the time, can buy a dwelling through GIPF. And the that can be
no.
Perhaps the subsidy.
No, Uncle Bana. Mm-hmm. GIPF is the pension fund for people that are working in government. They are the ones that can go to GIPF and say, I want part of my money.
That one I know. That one I understand.
Yes,
I know.
But
I'm
somebody
talking about the people who are working in the just listen carefully.
No, Uncle Bona. The people that are working in the private sector and do not have a share in GIPF.
Yes, I understand. That's what I'm saying. I understand. I still like that. That's why I'm mentioning about ShopRite and others, or even Eagle FM. So there was that thing that you can buy that thing. Of course, perhaps your institution might also negotiate and get some subsidized kind of, some incentive there. Do you understand?
I think you didn't hear it properly. I know what you are referring to.
No. I understand also when you are talking about the GIPF and all the government employees and those who have contributed. I know that part, but I'm specifically talking about this. So maybe it's just a matter of having to confirm whether there was that proposal or there was that thing in the manifesto that I'm referring to. So, which is a good idea. Just like, for example, if you mentioned that, yes, you can also buy a dwelling and get money from GIPF. It's not only for those who are working in the government. Even if you want to do business, you can as well get access to funding from GIPF.
Provided okay. We have reached a stalemate here.
No, we haven't.
So what we can do is let's leave it to others that have heard it well.
I have heard it well. That's mm-hmm. why I'm saying that even if you want to have a business, mm-hmm. maybe unlisted business companies, mm-hmm. you can as well get funding from GIPF.
Okay.
Is that not so?
Mm-mm.
Oh, my friend. So you want to tell me all those people who are running business and things like that, they don't, no one has got even funding from GIPF? So let's leave that one.
Uncle Bonner,
that's what I'm saying.
Let's leave that one. You have that's heard it, but I think you didn't hear it properly.
Oh, business friends. How many times your company have come here and taught us about issues of that nature?
That's why I'm saying you have not heard it properly.
No, I have attended a lot of lectures from Kanzioka Panyoka talking about unlisted companies and what, and all these things, the one that can be funded, and the asset managers that are there also to assist, to facilitate your access to those things. So this is it. So I've heard it very well. And I think I've learned something, some of this.
Okay, let's meet on Monday.
So now, so the time is gone. So I understand that, yes, maybe let's propose something. It's very important that most, maybe people who might have contributed here, they are now busy in their office, 8 o'clock. And I think 8 o'clock is the one that the time you open your line. Eh?
Yes.
And if you find them, their jackets hanging on their chairs, maybe calling, maybe trying to go there and listen or call and things like that. I think that might not be. Otherwise, the program will be dominated by Angobwana and maybe those who might find really, really little time to so that you can hear more from those other ones. So thank you very much, Franz. So
thank
the
you.
Issue of coordination in terms of addressing the housing challenges is very important to get a model. The model, some of these models are there already working, like for the capital, what? The one for that Dr. Shimwa, what's the name again? Hmm? The one you mentioned?
Mm.
From home. So all those things can be utilized provided there is a conviction, strong conviction from the employer.
Even right.
Your employer.
Thank you very much.
To get subsidy and build houses.
Thank you very much.
Good.
All right. Uncle Bonner did not hear the GIPF issue very well. So I cannot just go to GIPF now and say, I want 200,000 to go and build my house. When they check me, I'm not registered with any GIPF. I don't have any file in there. They will not give me money because the money that is there is not mine. But if I have if I have pension through GIPF, I'm working in the government, I can request a quota of my pension to do that. So, Uncle Bonner did not hear that well. Morning.
Morning, Flash. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm okay, I'm just laughing. Like even like me myself, maybe I can just drive my Jaiba to go to JP. I need Victor to start up.
There is nothing like that.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Even the people who have been in the service, they are only the people working for government. Where they having a stakeholder, they can able to apply for housing. It's what I heard. But apart from you, if you are working for somewhere, no, how do I am going to qualify? If you are not a shareholder. That's the problem. I think, okay, let us go back to the what, your topic. When it comes to waters of villages and so on. You see, the problem here, which I see, is our government. Because if you look now, especially there was a dispute between, if you know, Kwanyama and Ndongas about the bordering. Just imagine the way it was drawn up like I'm sure, Franz, you know where it's Onuno.
Onuno?
Yes.
Yes.
To Angwena. Yeah, that is supposed to be a border for Angwena and Oshkoto. That means it. And if you look where Onuno is, it's somewhere in the middle, almost near towards, of Kwanyama. Because you have the people who are up to this side of Onga, between Penyopinoka, Shikakashika, Pindangung, yeah, between Indangung is where the districts are going to be, Oshkoto and Wangwena. But that means we're pushing up to Onuno. It was not going to end it very well. But the problem which I see here is that we have people in the government who are not listening to indigenous people who have been there. Because even if we didn't write the history, people know exactly. So that's why some of them, even if you go to Kwanyama now, we have even Dr. Enana Dagamba, Akamba is gone long, long time ago. But they are still referring to that person. But Pitanande Nokuri, it was inherited even that village for more than maybe 10 times. Head of village, which passed by. And now, they are still calling the Enana Dagambaba. Where they go? So I see, it's to keep the history the way it is. Because things are moving, now Enana is also a town now. When you see, then later on you heard from somebody from Oshkoto saying, no, we've been here after 100 years. This is our village. And this is what we see, even in Europe, this is what it happened. Even though we know, understand that, yes, at Europe, at a level, they know how to deal with the dispute. Unlike in Africa, we always end up in war. Even though that we are okay, because the way we are demarcating ourselves when it comes to land, we used to know how to demarcate. That time of what? When you're having a village councillor who knows exactly how to give it to people. Unlike the way local authority coming in now. They are doing whatever they wish. If you see to one of the newspapers today even, somebody is also in hot water, buying a plot, free plot for 45,000 each. And the people are not happy in that area. And that's what I'm saying. Sometimes the way we do things, and when you're doing something for public, and you're in public eye, maybe it's a better to reflect to one of these things not to happen to you. Because, you know, you are also attracting, you're not only attracting the people who are already a crowd to that, yes, who are doing something, you're also attracting your enemy to get closer to you. Whatever you do, they're always trying to expose you. Even you are doing it in intent, in the good way. There was somebody trying to find that little thing which can keep you out. And this is what is happening to Sangwasa. And the thing is, when it comes to land, in Namibia, Kweja, I think it inherited, like, no, especially when you see that the people are coming to have a land which are then given to property developer, which are profit-driven people. And they have a municipality who sometimes is servicing the land. Instead of giving it to people to build it by themselves, it's giving it to the bank to control it. But remember, the bank are there to make money, not there to for charity. Not there because you are a security worker or you are a taxi driver to give you a favor. Not at all. It's about the pocket. And that is the problem, I think, we found ourselves after 56 years. Because nobody is concentrating that, yes, we have these people who are having low income group of people, having a low income earner. What about if we come up with this method just to meet them halfway? Because these people also, they're having family to raise. Nobody thought that because, my friend, just like now when you are, we are having, people are having diplomatic passports, they don't care for you to travel to go to South Africa to go and get a visa for American embassy. With a big building there, but you're not able to what, process a visa. And also South Africa is doing the same also. Where Namibians are required to have a visa. But South Africans, when they're coming in there, we don't ask them visa. You see? Sometimes what I'm saying, our politicians, they don't feel the way, they don't have that organized patriotism when it comes to country, men. It's all about themselves. And that is the problem where we find ourselves today. Because nobody cares. Even our traditional leader now, they are in the pocket of the politician. That's why they don't care much about their own people anymore. And that is a problem. And if you are going this way, where our traditional leaders, they already have to listen to what to the politician, what he's saying. If the council is calling the meeting, everybody have to listen to the council. Instead of the council to listen to the traditional leader, what the people are saying. Anyway, Master Franz, I'm sure there are a lot of people coming through.
All right.
Give other people a chance.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Right. Okay. In 1963, was it 1963? Around 1963, 1964, and 1965, respectively, KANU, that was Kaprivi National Union, right? They wrote a letter to the United Nations. It's a petition. And when we were debating this issue with a lot of people, they referred me to that letter. And then I asked them, what was the response of the letter? That's how I won the debate. Because they would not come to the response. So they wrote a letter wanting to be petitioning that they must be given an autonomy from Southwest Africa. So, and that is now according to one of the historians, Benny Siambango, that is pro, you know, Kaprivi. Now, the United Nations 20 years earlier have adopted a resolution. One of the first resolutions of the United Nations after its formation. That they are going to respect internationally demarcated borders. To avoid a third world war. So they were going to leave the borders as they are. The already drawn borders, the colonially drawn borders. They need to leave the drawn borders. So, and these guys wrote a letter, and the United Nations simply ignored the letter. They did not even respond to it, did not even look at it. Because they know that these people are calling for what we have already decided not to do. And that is what put the Lozi of Western, you know, province into a serious problem, because they don't have international support with their so-called Barroseland Republic they wanted to create. And that is why even the so-called Caprivi Liberation Army did not have international support, because countries have agreed not to tamper with already drawn borders. So, the issues of land, most of which are political issues, they're not really to say, you know, there was a reason why, you know, there is a reason why you have the, for example, the UDP, United Democratic Party, that was banned from participating in politics in Namibia. That's Meshack Muyongo's party. They seem not to have a push to say, well, what do they really want? Because these are the same people that are lining up at the Ministry of Gender every day receiving, you know, food rations. So these are just confused people that don't know what to do with their life. Sometimes land dispute can be brought up by people who don't know, who just don't know what to do with their lives. You know, just somebody who woke up one day and decided, we are members also, we want to be recognized. Yes.
That's a friend.
Mm.
How are you?
Good, how are you, sir?
Very good.
Yes.
The land issue. Let me first maybe start with urban land.
Yeah.
I think with the urban land issue, like our Tate Kwedi said, I do agree with him when he says that what people need is basically not housing, but they need land in which to build their houses, because people are actually capable in building when it comes to building their houses themselves. And I think people usually actually speak about the poor choices that the youth are making or is making. But I think once you're actually giving people land, you're actually giving them responsibility. And would you also prompt their behavior change as far as that is concerned? Because we have a lot of youth that we say they are spending their money, time in bars. But once you give them land, imagine what you're actually doing to those young people. We're actually changing the pattern of their thinking, meaning that instead of spending... how much is a beer? I think it's $27, $25. And how much is a drink? So at the end of the day, when these young people are drinking, or rather when they get their money, they are now thinking differently, because they are thinking of buying bricks and putting up shelters at the end of the day. And I think the city of Windhoek is actually doing something good, which they started now, where they say that they want to give people that have occupied land, they are giving them certificates. Some have already received certificates of recognition that you are the one that's settling on that particular land. And they said that they're also going to give land depending on the people's affordability, starting with 300 square meter and going up according to what you are able to afford. And I think that's what people need. All that they need from the city or the council is that the servicing of land. The servicing of the land and the connecting point, because when you look at land in Windhoek, it's much more expensive to to serve as compared to other places because of the mountainous area that we find ourselves in. But the connecting points, such as your sewer pipe, your electrical grid, they can actually help to set up those things. And we have a lot of companies that also benefit from government tenders or city tenders. Some of these companies can also, some of the suggestions is that they can contribute by volunteering some of their equipment. And this type of company will get a certificate, should actually get a certificate of recognition that you are some of the people that actually contributed to communities when it came to servicing of the land. So if the next tender comes up, those are the companies that should be first considered because they gave first to the community, so therefore they should be considered. When it comes now to a sewer connection to the main pipe, our young people that are unemployed who went to vocational training centers should be able to, the plumbers, the bricklayers, and the electricians, they should now be able to do this for us, and then we should be able to pay the money out of our own pocket. And that's another way that we make sure that our young people that are unemployed, that have these skills, can also be able to get a job from us at the end of the day. And that's how money actually circulates within the community. But giving people land, you are not going to satisfy everyone. I mean, building houses for people, you are not going to satisfy the whole entire nation. But when you give us land, to tell the truth, we'll be able to buy our what? To build our own houses. But we'll also be able to, all that we need is basically just an invoice or rather a price of this particular land. And then we'll be able to pay that particular land off. The same as our grandparents were and our fathers were able to pay off the land during the apartheid time. Because that part, when you get your municipal bill, there's always a segment for land also that you are settling on. Tate France.
Yes, sir. Hello?
Tate France.
Yes, sir.
Going on to the traditional land and the border, it's a complicated one. I can only speak on what I know, and that's basically the land in the 4O region, or what we call the former Ovambo land. Tatekwedi also spoke that Ondonga border went all the way to Tumeb and Otavi, and some actually says that all the way to Grootfontein, because you understand there were actually some that came from South Africa and actually came to settle there. They wanted to create something called Watwat of Transvaal, but they were actually pushed back by the Ndonga kings. One of the Ndonga kings that actually pushed them back, I think it was Nangolo. So at the end of the day, when we look at that particular land, what does the Ndonga people actually identify as their capital? They look at Ondangwa as their capital, but what does Ondangwa fall under? It falls under Oshana. And what's given under the Oshikoto Council is basically now your Nipa constituencies and your Nipa constituencies, and then you have the decentralization of some of the offices that has been taken to Umthia, and also Tumeb is under Oshikoto. But the Ndonga people themselves, they also identify Ndangwa as theirs. So there's always been this back and forth. Why should the border of Oshana be cut through the middle of what? Of Ndonga? Because when you look at this site of Oluno, it's mainly under Oshikoto, but the other site of Ndangwa itself, it's under Oshana region. Why should the border actually cut through that? But when you also look at it, we have this 4O region, but when we have the 4O region, we have eight subgroups. So at the end of the day, how do you also satisfy eight subgroups when you have only 4O regions? So, and I think that there are certain things that we need to make peace with that, yes, through traditionally, or rather by my subgroups borderline, this is where our borders are. But also from the government mapping point of view, we should also make peace that in order for everybody to be able to have a state of this particular 4-0 region having been 8, I think it makes sense that on a regional point, this is where the regional borders are. But on the traditional perspective, this is where the borders are.
Yeah, because so people don't make a difference between traditional demarcating and the administrative demarcation.
Exactly. And I think once we get to understand that, I think we make peace with it. Because look, when you look at, I live in what? In Ohangwena region, but under the Ondonga traditional authority. But once you actually understand that this is where the region is, and this is where my traditional land is, I think we should be able to make peace with that. Because you can't satisfy all the 8 regions with 4 regions. I mean, of 8 traditional authorities with 8 regions, you can't. With 4 regions, you can't. Because the regions are smaller compared to what to the number of what traditional authorities that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is basically just my contribution.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. I think we have done justice to this topic. One of the topics that we have done justice to it. Yeah, so for me, I think there is a problem that the government is, I don't know how they are going to solve it. The government will have to solve this problem because are you talking about the geographic location? Are you talking about traditional jurisdiction? Are you talking about administrative demarcation when you are talking about Bwabwata? So when you are talking about to whom does it belong, are we looking at it geographically or historical, traditional, jurisdiction? Or are we looking at the current government administrative demarcation? Which base, which scale are we trying to measure Bwabwata to determine to whom it belongs? Is it by geographical location, by historical and jurisdiction, traditional jurisdiction, or by current government demarcation through delimitation commission? Which one? That's where the minister needs to know. You have come late. Hello?
I'm not coming to make anything. I just want to propose something to an entity or a company. Come up with a viable and promotable idea to build houses for maybe, let's say, low income earners. And they want to get money from GIPF, you think they will not get?
No, I don't want to be the spokesperson of GIPF.
That's what I was telling you that. Yes,
no, but I'm sure you got it wrong.
Oh, even this one, I'm getting it wrong.
Yeah, let's not go back and forth on that issue. My time is out. I'm leaving now. I'm handing you over the mic.
How it is. Okay, thank you. But I'm just telling you how it is.
Right.
Good.
All right. So I'm not going to be drawn into a GIPF conversation. My time is out.